You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
As I've been saying the whole morning, we're going to be having a really awesome and important conversation this hour. I want you to listen, to learn, but also to share your stories and to ask questions of my guest as well. And we're going to be talking about menorrhexia, or in general, our attitudes as men towards food and our bodies. So often, most of the time, if you had to open a magazine or to listen to a program on radio or television that deals with eating disorders, 99% of the time, you're probably talking about girls or about young women or about adult women, because we think that women have a monopoly on eating disorders. And it's not true. Us men also have very difficult relationships, sometimes clinically difficult relationships with our bodies and with food. And I want us to talk about that today. So the lines are going to be open throughout this hour. But let me introduce our guest to you. I've got firstly on my left, health coach Zakira Khalik. Zakira, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Didn't butcher your name, did I?
No. Been perfect.
Practicing the whole morning. I'll get a gold at the Ice Deptford. Then we've got Adam Dean. How's it, Adam?
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Who's a trainer of a very difficult word here, calisthenics.
There you go, spot on.
That's higher grade. What is that?
Body weight training.
Is that all? Why did you say so?
Because you have to keep it interesting.
Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it. And then an old friend coming for a visit as my Catholic guilt recedes for not having seen her in a while, clinical nutritional therapist and founder of Reinvent, Nikki Robertson. Nikki, it's lovely seeing you again. How are you?
Thank you.
Nikki, I'm going to start firstly with you. This topic is obviously incredibly important. The last time I went to half a workshop of yours, I was not surprised that almost everyone in that room were female. And I think there were maybe two or three of us who were men in that room, and that might include one of the facilitators. And I thought to myself, wow, this is kind of interesting. Is it partly because what men are too ashamed to talk about body issues and relationships with food?
Yes, men don't go there. Generally speaking, I think we're seeing it more and more, but generally men think they've got it under control, or if we are seen to be looking for another some help, maybe it's a weakness. It's not something we do in a public platform unless we're talking to our buddies with a beer. So yeah, it's very rare to see men reaching out and going, this isn't working, something's not right, I need help. So yeah, it is pretty much the domain of women, which is why I think the concept of anorexia or body dysmorphia, eating disorders, is something that's not thought of a man problem. Guys get over it. They don't do that kind of thing, which is so far from the truth.
There's also the assumption, right, and I want you to speak to this before I bring the other guests in, that somehow in the aging process, women go through things like menopause. You have more hormonal changes, and that as men, we just age gracefully.
Well, you know, men have hormonal changes as well. And we've seen that more and more as well now with our diet. So diet high in sugar is going to pull down testosterone. It's going to increase our female hormone in men. You're going to see men with high levels of estrogen, not just because of what they're eating, but environmental toxins. So men go through a kind of a menopause as well. Okay. And sometimes it's called a midlife crisis, but there's a hormonal change, and that's also not addressed.
I thought it was called shopping for a car. Menorrhexia, is that a neologism or is that a real term?
It's not a real term. It's a colloquial sort of phrase to just, it's something that the media invented or a magazine invented.
What does it mean?
It means that it's the same as anorexia. So looking in the mirror and not seeing what's really there. It's seeing yourself as too skinny or skinnier than you really are or bigger than you really are, but not seeing the way you are as you are. So we've got filters in our brain, which sort of cloud our vision. And when the self-esteem is under attack or we're not feeling confident, then we don't see ourselves as we truly are. And sometimes we take our lives into our own hands and make really stupid decisions about how we're going to deal with
these
things.
That's so true. It starts very young, doesn't it, Adam? I mean, it starts with everything from, I don't know, the heroes in the Bible that are larger than life to the figurines that you and I as boys are given. And it seems very innocent until at the age of 40, you find yourself doing all sorts of things to either get into skinny jeans or to be as big as possible.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think, you know, like you're talking about figurines and like the Barbie discussion or the Ken doll, young kids are very impressionable and they internalize a lot of that kind of media and input. And we don't realize how it affects them or how they perceive things as they get older. And we, as we get older, we've noticed it and how we've interacted with our bodies and how we've gone to the gym, and now we have this picture in our head and what we aspire to look like. And it's not just somebody that's maybe suffering, like Nikki said, from a specific eating disorder. But I mean, any one of us as an average person has that, you know, ingrained in us from the way that we grew up. I mean, I can even speak for myself to say I can be aware of the fact that I see my body in a certain way because of the kind of things that I've been exposed to.
But it's extremely hard, right? Because I didn't even, until I started thinking about this topic, I didn't realize just how insidious it is. I mean, a couple of weeks ago in the show, we talked about toys. But beyond that, it's also about your value system, about your beliefs, Zakira. It can be you go to Greece and you see all these incredible works of art from the histories and sculpture. And it's just we bombard it. And often we talk about how toxic the imaging is from popular media. But everything from your heroes in your Bible stories to works of art in the history of art, all of it, have a certain kind of male physique that it holds up as the epitome of what it means to be masculine.
And I think that physique is changing as time goes on. So if you look back to the 1980s, you know, celebrities such as Burt Reynolds, excuse me, for example, he was athletic, he was slim, and he had a mustache, and, you know, he wasn't very masculine. And you can see as time has gone on that someone like Dwayne The Rock Johnson on Instagram, he is more masculine. And I think that is the look that every male is trying to chase.
Why are you looking at him?
I definitely don't have that physique. Let's just be clear about
it. But are
you
chasing it?
You know what? I think it's actually a good point that she makes. In terms of the perfect body, it's relative. It's the perfect body to somebody doing the Tour de France is very different to somebody doing Mr. Olympia.
Sure.
So it kind of depends on what your goal is.
Which physique do you admire? Because I have to confess, for me, the bigger, the well, not the better, but
more
I mean,
masculine.
I would rather look like The Rock than Bert.
You know what? That's actually very good. It's the bigger is better. And that's kind of the mantra of what it is to be in the gym environment as a male now.
Which is why, I don't know about you, which is why I also, I mean, Nikki has been trying to persuade me to do at least 3 very intense cardio sessions a week. And I struggle because, of course, as we say amongst ourselves in the locker room conversation, you don't want to be losing your gains by doing cardio. Yeah. And that's because of these images, Nikki.
Yeah. I also think it comes down to what men think women like. And, you know, this is a big problem.
And I think it's what men think women like is often different to what women actually like.
Why don't you tell me?
I think you should be taking notes here.
I think at the end of the day, men are attracted to looking more masculine. They see the bigger muscles with, or they associate it with strength. So bigorexia is often, it comes about where someone who is actually very strong and has a lot of muscle still sees themselves as small, puny, and not possessing a lot of strength.
What is it called? Bigorexia.
Bigorexia or reverse anorexia or muscle dysmorphia.
It's never
disorder.
Enough. We're never, big enough, powerful enough, masculine enough.
Yeah.
And for women, it's curvy enough, thin enough, skinny enough, tall enough. We're never enough.
Do we know at a societal level how prevalent this is?
It's massive. Most people will never admit to it. It's much bigger than we think because it's not spoken about. Maybe within small groups, but most of us, I sit in a practice environment because I prod for these questions. I try and see who really battles in these areas on purpose. But in a general social environment, I don't think people are willing to be forthcoming about their insecurities for obvious reasons. You know, we paint this picture that life is perfect and but it's so far from the truth.
And I think also the divide between normal bodybuilding and something like bigorexia is so thin. You know, you may be just going to the gym, your average gymmer, picking up weight, but you don't actually realize when that passion becomes an addiction.
Mm. Now, there's a fine line between that sort of benign interest in being healthy and fit and muscular and it becoming an obsession. And it is definitely becoming more prevalent. And you will notice it, like Nikki said, in guys talking about it. It's almost like bearing your feelings, and it's not something guys do. That's not masculine. You don't talk about it. You just don't do those things. But if any guy that is willing to admit it will say, you know, when they're alone, having their meal at home or whatever it might be, those thoughts that go through their head chances are that it is exactly that. Mm. It's that I'm not big enough. I need to do this to get a little bit bigger. That guy at the gym looked a little bit bigger than me. Look more masculine. Look, and those are the comparisons that get made. And
absolutely.
On that's a subconscious right. level as well.
Okay. If you're listening to this conversation, does it sound familiar to you? Are we describing your life, your relationship with your body and with food, with gym as well? Give us a call and just tell us what some of your habits are. Or maybe you are a sister, a mom, a wife, and you have to deal with the men in your lives who are in denial about what is going on. Bigorexia or anorexia that they may be symptomatic of, but it's difficult for you to have a conversation with them. 011-883-0702. Give us a call here in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
Your CBS Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Thank you so much for staying with this conversation. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about our relationship as men to food and to our bodies and different type of disorders, clinical ones, that we also experience and we don't put the spotlight on enough. And I've got three fantastic guests in Zakira Khalik, who's a health coach, Adam Dean, and also Nikki Robertson, who's with me. And they are all experts on nutrition as well as calisthenics trainer.
We're getting there.
I'm going to get there one day. A bronze for that one, after my gold for getting Zakira's name right. I want to, you heard me talk a little bit this morning at the beginning of the show, Nikki. Thank you for the love, tuning in at 9 o'clock already. Look at you. About a friend of mine who had a relationship with food. Firstly, he wanted to be as skinny as possible. And that's partly because this is a weird thing within the gay community where we think you can never be too rich or too thin. And alternatively, as big as possible, but anything but an average body. And by an average body, we mean one that is either not thin or not very big. But to deal with social occasions, he'll eat whatever he wants when he goes out. But when he goes home, he had a feather that he would put in the back of his mouth to induce vomit to try and get all the stuff out.
Yeah. So I want to debunk this for once and for all, that throwing up or going to the toilet does not make you thin. And this is how it works on a chemical level. So you're going to go and eat something that's full of sugar, or you're going to drink a lot of alcohol, you're taking a lot of calories, and you think if you throw that up a couple of hours later, you're going to get rid of the stuff that's going to make you fat. But here's what really happens. So you eat a lot of processed sugar, highly refined sugar, and in response, your pancreas makes a lot of insulin. Now, insulin in abundance is a fat storage chemical. This happens within seconds. So unless you're getting rid of it almost instantly, and within 2 to 3 minutes, the damage is already done. So your body is already storing fat. It's already doing the thing that you don't want it to do. All you're doing by purging is getting rid of solid matter. Now, when you get rid of solid matter, you've got nothing for your cells to absorb. There's no nutrition, and your body starts cannibalizing itself over time. So it starts eating away at your muscle mass. It also will start eating away at your bones. So in order to balance the pH, because now you're creating this environment where there's a lot of acid, because you're forcing bile and all sorts of gastric activity to happen, you're creating a lot of acid. You're also destroying your teeth, by the way. So there's an upset in the pH. So your body's going to literally cannibalize your bones as well. So over time, you will look emaciated. You will look thin, but it's due to malnutrition, not due to the fact that you're losing fat. So you've still got the fat. You've just got nothing else holding the fat up. And that's a fact. So it doesn't help to purge. It helps to get an education about what your body needs to burn fat efficiently and keep it off. So yeah, that's the problem, because you eventually die of malnutrition, like someone who's been through
it. We've got some calls. We'll take some calls, but that's very useful. So it's that's why it's important to have the conversation at the point at which you're going to make the choice about what to eat and what drives your emotions related to that. Let's go to Midrand. Just put on your headphones for me, guys. And then let's have a little bit of a chat with Hector. Hector, good morning.
Good morning, Isidus. How are you?
Lekker. Talk to us.
Lekker. You see this, I started gymming at a younger age. I was about 24. And back then, I thought I was really small, but a lot of people, and especially a lot of my friends, used to say, you are really big. And like I became now known as the biggest guy in the group. And now growing up, I want to maintain that and keep in the image that, okay, maybe I'm big, but I must admit, like, I do not see myself as big at all, and now it's becoming harder as I'm getting older.
How old are you, Hector?
Like, I'm 29 now.
And do you know your stats, body mass, fat percentage, muscle mass?
Yes, I do know my my fat percentage. The last I checked it out, I was at 25%.
Okay.
25%, yes. Yes, so this whole image, this whole thing has been playing my mind a lot, growing up and up to where I am, where a lot of people will say, you look really big, and you have big arms, and you have big legs. And I look at myself, and I, like, what are these people talking about? I mean...
Send us a young picture, if you have one. Don't worry, hashtag no homo. No, I tell you why, and I want to bring Zakira in here, because it will be interesting to see from the picture whether, to our four outside eyes, not his own eyes, whether he does in fact Zakira look quite big or not. Mm-hmm. Because I would imagine, isn't the very clinical definition of some of these disorders that we objectively don't see ourselves the way we
absolutely
actually look?
Absolutely. I would love to see that picture too, so please send it through. I think that, you know, I think it's normal for someone, and Adam, you know as well, who's often an avid gymmer, and you always think, oh, I'm still not happy with my body. I still want bigger shoulders, bigger quads. I think it's normal. I think it gets clinical when you become obsessive. So okay, when you look in the mirror for hours on end with utter disgust with your body. Okay. I think that's the dividing line, as well as overtraining, training while injured. You know, these are all symptoms of bigorexia. But I think, you know, I think it's normal. I just think you need to know when enough is enough, you know.
Is there any comfortable or even sort of rule of thumb way of knowing, Adam, what counts as obsession? Because I mean, if I see guys on Instagram, for example, showing off their meal prep for the week, I think of that as obsession. Where does it, you know? And sometimes I'm surprised, because I will speak to one or two of them at the gym, and I'm like, wow, you're a lawyer. I don't know your time for a career with the amount of time you're spending at gym and doing meal prep. So how do we decide? Is it a question of whether it interferes with the other projects in your life? What is a good guy idea?
I think, I mean, look, from a meal prep perspective, I'm definitely on your page. I mean, for me, if I make a bowl of cornflakes, it's, you know, that's meal a lot prep of prep for me. That's a lot of prep for me. So maybe that's obsessive for me. But I think, like Zakira said, when it turns into something where you're not just paying, you know, attention to, okay, this has changed, or I look a certain way, into where you standing in front of the mirror and you're constantly thinking about where you need to be better, where you worse, where you, what you need to change.
Okay.
Once you start, I think obsessing is the word, where you can't get your mind off it. Mm. And you're sitting at work and you're wondering, okay, no, when I go to the gym, I need to do this. And you're not paying attention to your work, or you're driving.
Sure.
And it's just constantly on your mind. I think that does become unhealthy, because you're scrutinizing your body and at an unhealthy level.
And you seclude yourself as well. It takes over your life.
So you might even avoid social occasions.
Exactly, because you feel you're not big enough, you're not attractive enough. And like I said, it doesn't only have to do with muscle size. It could be baldness, it could be hair, anything that makes you feel less masculine. What I also wanted to add is, I don't think meal prep is obsessive. Just to the listeners, I think it's important to make sure that you follow a healthy eating plan. And if you meal prep, you will avoid going to the canteen and getting a lunch bar because you're short on time.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. I like that, if you meal prep. It's a doing word. It's a doing phrase.
You know, the other thing on meal prep is, it's definitely a good way to do it, to make sure that you do eat healthier and you've always got something on hand that's not an unhealthy alternative. But that also does become obsessive, in the sense that, and I mean, Nikki will know about macro and micronutrient counting. You'll have instances where people will, again, avoid social encounters or social outings because they don't know whether that count of that the nutrients of that food is in line with their diet plan, right. And they'll actually avoid the encounter
right,
altogether.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, Nikki, I'm going to bring you in here, both on the nutrition point, but also as I'm listening to both Zakira and to Adam, I'm thinking to myself, this conversation is clearly not just about eating disorders. This is a psychosocial issue.
Absolutely, and it's also a control issue. So where we feel we have no other control in our lives and people are running away with our decision-making power, there's something that we can control, and that is what we put in our mouths and what we look like, and that's very dangerous as well. So yes, it is a social issue, social insofar as also what we are exposed to on social media, what we see as the new norm. And, you know, I think for myself and having actually personally been down that road is one way to tackle that need to control and the need to almost have some kind of semblance of control in one's life is to put measures in place. So if I am doing what needs to be done, it can alleviate that negative self-talk. I mean, the person we talk to most in the world is ourselves. And when you find that you've got nothing good to say to yourself, that's when you realize you've got a problem. The problem is, though, most of us suffering from these issues don't know we're suffering from these issues. This is the new normal. Sure. And it really is up to our family and friends to go, wait a minute, this isn't right. This isn't healthy. You're not a happy person. And because we don't talk about it enough, it doesn't mean the tribe shouldn't exist. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't step in and say, listen, buddy, I can see there's a problem. Can I help you? People don't do that. Okay. We're not brave enough to do that.
Offense and Roland, I'm going to come to you guys in the next minute or two to do very important contributions to this conversation. But in the meantime,
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
Indeed, you can tweet us at Radio 702 at Cape Talk. Oh, what wonderful pictures of us. Look how happy you guys look there on the 702 Twitter account, retweets. And now we get back to the conversation. Offense, good morning.
Hi, hello, yes.
Thanks for holding on, by the way.
No problem. Good morning to you and your guests. I'm a 23-year-old dude. I've been through the whole shebang of the gym, the buying of the supplements, all that, the food preps. And, you know, I also come from, a school, a prominent school. I won't mention the name here, but where we were, multiple times in the papers, because of dudes, getting involved with steroids and all that kind of thing. And, basically my whole thing is just that, this whole masculine look, it's scarier and scarier how it just actually starts from such a young age, from a younger and younger age, as we see nowadays, where literally kids are dabbling, in things, at a young age in order to get this look. Because also we know, especially with the old boys school, particularly in the South African context, in the rugby scene where literally it's either you're the biggest or you will play for the C team or you'll play for the D team. And unfortunately for some guys, they can grow out of it, but for some others, they just can't, unfortunately. And they just basically have this recurring image of you need to be the most masculine dude in order just to make it in life.
Sir, how old are you now, offensive?
I'm 23 years old.
Okay. And when you were playing rugby at school, what were you guys fed?
I remember, pretty much, besides the food, it was, the supplements. We're talking about, these proteins and all that kind of thing. And, it's only nowadays where we start to hear that, the supplements are for that very word, a supplement, and they actually aren't really needed, especially if you have a good, healthy diet. But unfortunately, this knowledge isn't getting out quick enough to these guys, and they end up actually then dabbling in more extreme ways, of attaining these bodies.
Yeah. Before I let you go, what is your relationship now with food and supplements in the gym, and what's your routine?
I'm still dedicated to the gym. At least because I do a lot of research. I've really been able to sort of develop my knowledge as to, what is right for me, what isn't, because I know as much as what might work for, a normal pro bodybuilder, isn't necessarily what I need, in order to attain my goals. But unfortunately, especially with, you have now on the 25th of May, these guys, these IFBB pros, are coming to South Africa, to come and, show their stuff off. And, you know, just part of that whole masculine thing. Guys want that image. And unfortunately, what people don't understand is, you know, in order to attain some of these bodies, some of these unnatural bodies, you know, you need to do extreme things.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I don't think that's, that's the people who actually don't understand that.
Absolutely. We'll come back to those issues in a moment. Roland, good morning. Hello, Roland.
Hi, good morning. You serious?
Good morning. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
Extremely well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. And by the way, this is my first time on air. I'm from El Dorado Park, and I say thank you for that.
It's a pleasure, sir. Thanks for calling in. You've just become one of those weird people who call into radio stations.
Thank you, Silvis. You'll be visiting El Dorado Park very soon. I'll get you.
I'll be back.
Thanks, man. I'm hoping you and your guests can assist me. Mm-hmm. My six-year-old asked me a kind of a weird question this morning. I'm not sure if it's old age or it's just a gray moment, but I just couldn't answer this moment. And she wanted to know, ready? After eating, do amphibians or do they have to, or after eating, do they have to go and rest in the water? Why do they have to wait in the water? And I just couldn't answer that question. Perhaps maybe your guest can help me out with that, please.
Okay, it's not the Naked Scientist edition of the show, but maybe someone will bite there. Eugene, hello.
Good day. How are you? You serious?
I'm all right. Thank you, Eugene.
Yes. I just wanted to, and good day to your listeners, or your guest, and the listeners. I just wanted to find out, if one observes with doing too much calisthenics and eating right, would that also be classified as an obsession of some kind?
Okay, very good question. Okay, we've got a number of contributions there. Shall we firstly take the last one? We are all looking at one person to answer that. You want to answer, Eugene? Adam? You've got the word in your title, Moss.
Yeah, no problem. Look, I think an obsession can manifest in any number of ways, in any environment, in anything that we do. So from a calisthenics point of view, yes, you can definitely become obsessed with it. And I can say this from personal experience, that when I started with it, it was a very new concept. Nobody had really heard about it other than a couple of YouTube videos and that kind of thing. And with social media becoming more prevalent over the last couple of years and that sport getting more airtime internationally and locally, I did become obsessed with it because it was something new that I wanted to figure out. And I just didn't give myself a rest. So, yes, you can definitely become obsessed with it. And any obsession can be unhealthy because you'll pick up injuries. You'll devote all of your time to it.
So how prevalent it is and how much of your resources mentally and otherwise.
Yeah, especially mentally and physically. You don't realize the toll that it takes on you because you just keep pushing through the pain.
That's right. That's absolutely right. By the way, Hector sent us a picture, guys.
Oh, that's
it. Was this for the ladies?
I think it's big.
Or
I think you're big.
Four.
I'm trying to decide whether it's just big and Jay or whether it's what we call hashtag thick boys, because they're two different pictures here, and you look slightly different in them, Hector. Zakira will be the judge. There's the one picture.
Yeah, he got some good biceps on it.
Some very good biceps.
Shall you we can't share? See a smile.
Should we share him with Nikki?
Yeah. He's aesthetically well built.
Yeah, no, it depends what he's going for. He does certainly have big biceps, but it depends what he's going for. Maybe there's no six pack there, you know.
Well, that's the thing. There is no six pack because here's the other picture. But, I mean, this is a body that one should not be unhappy with. There's a more of a full picture.
Yeah. No, he's in good shape. He's really in good shape. I'd definitely put him under 25%.
Adam, you can look too.
Yeah. Sure. You don't mind.
Let's talk about that very important first call. And I'm going to start with you, Nikki. I mean, what happens in our school, especially the rivalry between schools for being top of the league and when it comes to sports like rugby, it can lead to all sorts of toxic relationships, not just between the boys and their own bodies, but we have to talk about the parents because whey protein is expensive. I need to get that money from somewhere. We have to speak about the coaches and about the schools as well.
Yeah. You know, what's imprinted in childhood stays with you for life, especially through puberty, because the brain is making so many neural connections. Then you've got so many new hormones coming to the fore and our self-esteem is built on that period of time in our lives. So when you've got parents that are perpetuating and wanting their children to achieve in sport and want to be a certain way, and many, many parents live through their children, they're not making life very easy for them. So it is going to set you up for a lifetime of misery. And, you know, but parents are not psychologists. We're not taught to, you know, make this everything all sort of nice for our kids. We don't know. We are also sort of damaged in our own way. So we're just almost perpetuating the damage as well. Hmm. It is very, something has to change, whether it is the way schools do sport or the coaching needs to come, you know, see things from a different point of view. There needs to be a different way of looking at what the criteria are. I believe that supplementation for people under 16 should be outlawed. It really should. It's not necessary. We need to rely on food. And just stop with you've got to be better than, more than, when, you know, when it comes to body image.
What about weight training? At what age should one start?
Yeah, I would say from at least 16 onwards, because you can't.
There are many kids younger than that.
Yes,
in the
gym. Course,
yeah.
Absolutely. But you're going to cause damage. You know, from a growth skeletal development point of view, you're going to do damage. If it's a body weight training, that's a different story. There's a lot of body weight training formats that are really, really beneficial for children that will set them up for good muscle tone and really good natural upper body, lower body strength, such as gymnastics and acrobatics. And
but then we've got to be clear, because some personal trainers are great, but some of them will already let the young ones do like incredible weight training stuff.
Yeah, there's not enough regulation. People aren't being policed enough, really and truly, in when it comes to teaching children and knowing when to stop and when to push and when to hold back. Children should not be picking up weights.
Absolutely.
That's the bottom line. Yeah. We should be doing body weight exercises.
Zakira, I can see you nodding in agreement.
Yeah, I think that kids should focus more on movement than muscle. So something like functional training, you know, where the exercises depict real life movements, with focus on power, some sort of strength, mobility, you know, and the exercises extend beyond the gym.
Yes.
So it helps with movement, pushing, pulling objects,
get
balance.
Out of the gym.
Absolutely. You know? Nikki, I want you to handle that weird question in the middle from Eldos Amensim at Lisnaksathra. I think part of what he meant, or maybe I'm going to redirect it for hopefully an equally beneficial, slightly different question. When I've eaten, how do I know that I'm, what's the word? Sated? Is that the
satiety,
word?
Satiety, satiated. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on what's going on.
If I think I want seconds,
gut.
How long must I wait?
Yeah. So it comes down to digestion. So it's not just a brain game. And it's not just, you know, having a stretched stomach, as some people call it. There are certain foods that are going to almost smudge the way you feel about how full you are. So fast food is designed specifically in this way. So food science will say, well, if something's salty, we need to give you something sweet, because then it's going to perpetuate your appetite. Then we need to give you something salty and then something sweet again. Hence, the burger and milkshake industry was born, because it stops your brain from knowing when to stop. Now, satiety comes from having a diet that is full of macronutrients, proteins, whole food, carbs, fiber, healthy fats in every single meal. Now, no one's ever overdosed on fiber. No one can overdo spinach. I've never seen anyone go boss with a steak, you know, but you can do that with cake really easily, because the chemistry in that kind of food is not going to switch on the enough button. It's just never going to happen. So when we're eating whole foods and we're eating a complete meal, you will naturally know when to stop. Your stomach's going to go, I've had enough now. Mm. There's chemicals in our brain and in our stomachs which regulate satiety. If you don't know when to stop, then something is biologically, physiologically not switching on and off.
Sure.
It's not so much a greedy response or anything to do with that. It's also got to do with gut health. If you haven't got the bacteria and the acid to break down what you eat, and you're never going to feel satisfied.
Adam, some people respond very well to lots of information. They can process that. One or two of the callers there said they do that kind of research themselves. Now, Offense has started by saying, I've done my research. I'm not an elite athlete. I know what I need, what I don't need for my own goals. But some of us sometimes just become overwhelmed by this kind of information. You were saying during one of the breaks earlier, for example, the one season protein is all the rage, the next season it's no longer the thing, this decade you must have your carb loading before comrades, the next time you mustn't have it. What is your own relationship with food? What do you eat?
So my relationship with food is, if I see it, I eat it. So
genetic life.
No, look, I mean, I also used to be a very scrawny kid when I was in school. I went to a boys' school, and I was I didn't play rugby. I didn't play. So I was first team table tennis. So I was not the cool kid at all.
And we all have a past.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, maybe it is genetics, but I do believe everything in moderation. I do believe that there are good foods and there are bad foods that we should be staying away from. Like Nikki was saying, things like cake and things like that, they don't actually fill you up, but are full.
So you don't eat that?
On the odd occasion, yeah.
Okay.
If I feel like treating myself. But I don't believe that.
Do you measure your portions? No, like 153 grams of protein?
It's like I was saying earlier, meal prep for me personally is it is a challenge.
That's very nice. It's very nice. But I guess no two bodies are the same, right?
No, they aren't.
I don't have his genetic makeup, so I can't behave the way he does. So how do we individualize it, Zahira? Because everyone seems to have the gospel about all body types, and clearly no two human beings are the same, because our biologies are different, and then there are other facts about an environment that are different.
Yeah. I think it depends what your goals are.
Okay.
So if you want a more muscular physique, you're obviously going to incorporate more protein in your diet, but you're not going to exclude the carbs as well. If you want to lose weight, you're obviously going to cut down on your carbs, but you're still going to have a high protein diet. So it depends what you are chasing. No diet is the same for everyone. So I firmly believe that you cannot – not everyone can have a generic diet because everyone's goals are different.
Sure.
And you need to calculate your macros and your micros. And I think Nikki can touch more about the nutritional side of this, is where everyone has a different number of proteins that they need per day, carbs that they need per day. And that is often related to what your goal is in terms of.
It gets very confusing, Nikki, right? Because the one year we told brown rice is fine, you can have that. And then you go to Nikki and Nikki says, no, it's white rice. Now I eat white rice without feeling guilty. Mm. But for the average Joe, it can be really difficult to know what to make of sometimes logically incompatible bits of advice out there.
Yeah, there is so much out there and it is so confusing. And yes, when you're an athlete and you have a specific outcome and a specific goal, you really need to know that you need to get in X amount of different macronutrients to reach that goal. It's a calculation and it gets you there. But for somebody who's not an athlete, who just wants to eat better, there's you know, counting every gram that you put down your throat becomes an obsession in itself.
Hmm.
So when food, for instance, sugar or cake, becomes an obsession and a need and a craving, that is a messenger. Something's out of whack. It's out of balance. You're not getting what you need in a day.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we've got to sort of define where it's appropriate to obsess over how many grams of protein I'm getting, and am I just getting enough to, you know, I'm looking good, I'm feeling good, I'm functioning in the world. And that's different people and their different outcomes.
And there's also another, I think there's a simpler way to, maybe for the average person, like we were saying earlier during the break, your average person is not an elite athlete that either goes to the gym or does take supplements or needs specific nutrition. But the simplest way for them to have a better diet or have a healthier diet is just to incorporate more fruits and vegetables in a given diet. Just a small step like that.
But then we go to page 3 of the newspaper and it says to us, don't forget there are hidden sugars in the fruits. And you go, oh gosh.
Yeah. And when you say to people fruits and vegetables, they go, I hate vegetables, I'll just go on big on the fruit. And then that's a problem.
I always say it's safe to stick to the greener veggies.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
And is that the rule of thumb?
And stay out of the box. So if it comes in a box with ingredients,
and fruit,
it's a problem. Fruit, there's a place for fruit, but it depends again on the individual. So if you've got high insulin and you're eating boxes of grapes, that's not going to help you.
And fruits such as watermelon, that's very, very high in fructose. You know, you want to avoid fruits like that, whereas a green apple blueberries, they have less of a sugar content.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Rhonda Bosch. Don, good morning.
Good morning, you see this, how's everybody going?
Well, thank you.
Good. Two things. One was a statement, the other one was a question. Mm-hmm. So, statement with regards to quality of foods, where we are on, instead of using supplements, depending on the natural food source and so forth, isn't there a question around the quality of the greens, let's say, for example?
Yes.
The green apple.
Yes.
The cauliflowers and certainly broccoli and that type of stuff. So the quality of the foods and how they are brought to the table and where they were sourced from sometimes should be a question in one's mind, perhaps from pesticides or even meats from a hormone perspective that the animals are fed, chicken, whatever the case may be. And that's more of a statement, perhaps one you guys could unpack when I listen on the radio. The question I had, though, was within rehabilitation and able body training, just body training without weights, perhaps you could push it to the limits to do some weights with it, but muscle stimulation through electrolysis or EMS. Has anyone on the panel got some thoughts on that?
Okay, let's take it. That's two big ones. We've only got 5 minutes left. I still want to squeeze in Karen if we can. The first one's very important. Mm. What is the really cool place that you introduced me to?
Jackson's. It's Jackson's Food Market. They've one in Bryanston, one in Kyalami.
I went to the one in Bryanston. That's the one we went to.
So, yeah.
Awesome. The difference in food, the quality is just so
phenomenal.
Obvious.
Yes.
The eggs, I haven't seen such yellow yolks in forever.
Absolutely. Where our food comes from is a big problem because we have very little control over how things are farmed and what our food is exposed to, and that is a massive issue. Just simply the fact that plants are not grown in nitrogen-rich soils. We're not getting the minerals and vitamins that we're needing on a very basic level. So that's where supplementation fits, but it doesn't have to be expensive or complicated. Mm. There's a lot we can do to keep it really, really cost-effective, but we assume that we have to go off to the big pharmacy and buy the most expensive imported stuff, and you just don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And there are places, and it is becoming more widely available. And places like Jackson's are really, really trying to keep it cost effective.
Mm.
And
look, it was pricier than what I thought. But then the other thing is, you're also talking about what the cost is in real terms of some of the goods.
Yes.
In the sense that once you take into account how much fuller you feel more quickly, the illnesses and other stuff that comes with pesticides and the other tiddlantankies from the major retailers, then what you pay, the price comparison at the till point is also not, it's not the most accurate way to actually think about the economics.
And they are supporting the small farmers who are really, really trying to get 100%. It right. And it's
local. I love their food. I can testify. I've tried it out. Absolutely super. What about the second question? Electro what?
It's electrostimulation.
What's that?
EMS training. It's
sounds
almost using,
very kinky.
It's using machines like TENS machines and that, where you're attaching electrodes to specific muscles that you plan on training. So if you're doing a bicep curl, you're attaching electrodes to the biceps, wrist.
Gotcha.
All those muscles that are actually working to make them work a little bit harder.
Yeah.
It comes from, or the current mantra is that you can do a 60-minute workout in 15 minutes.
Once a week and you'll reach your body goal.
But you know, it's so interesting though, Adam, how the social stuff inevitably also come in here, because whatever you're going to say next about whether that's a good thing or bad thing for the body biologically, I always judge people. I go like, you're so lazy.
I might be burnt at the stake for what I'm going to say next, but
I like you,
either way. I don't believe that it works for two reasons. One being it's purporting a shortcut into getting the body that you want, which it never works. We used to see old days of Very Mark where you could strap electrodes onto your abs and sit there and watch TV and you get abs. But also, though, that type of training, it doesn't address things like balance or proprioception or functionally using that muscle in a specific environment. If you want to balance on one leg or run a 5-kilometer race, you can stand there and attach those electrodes and do your 15-minute or 20-minute workout. But when you have to apply that strength or that balance or whatever, your body doesn't have a reference point because it wasn't trained in that specific way.
That makes sense to me. That makes total sense. Shall we squeeze in one last call? Karen, thank you so much for your patience. What is your question?
Thank you. Good morning to all of you. Won't ask you all how you are because I'm sure you're all fine. my problem is I look at food and I just want to be sick. I can't eat this month.
Wow.
Is it psychological or?
I honestly do not know. I know that I'm not well and I've got to go and have a C-scope done and see my doctor and everything else, but I start making food and I just look at it and I end up feeding it to the dogs.
Sure. Nikki?
Yeah. Look, there's a number of
reasons.
Thank
you, Karen, for sharing that with us. I'm really sorry for what you're going through.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons that would happen, and it's usually medical. So you would want to see what's going on in the gut. You know, and a food aversion is nature's way of saying something's poisonous out there. I can't handle it. I can't digest it. I can't deal with it. And it's very, very scary because you do waste away. So the best thing to do is go see your doctor and rule out all those physical problems first and, you know, get onto the right treatment. And then if there is a psychological reason, then again, see the right professional and deal with it.
Which is why for you as a clinical nutritionist, it's so important that one gets to the bottom of some of these obstacles by doing unnecessary medical, even if it's...
Have to work with a doctor all the time, yeah. Because there's always going to be something that needs to be almost always going to be something medically treated. And when you are trying to help somebody, you need a team, really, around that.
Okay. Speaking of a team, you guys have been a fantastic team. Thanks so much for coming in. Adam, Dean. Adam, so where do you do this weird thing, calisthenics?
We do.
I want to try it. It sounds very odd.
We use parks. We use outdoor.
Oh, you use parks?
Yeah, it's outdoor.
You're based in Cape Town?
No. Joburg, actually. But, I mean, if you want to climb a tree, you can go climb a tree. It's about just interacting with your body. It's about interacting with your environment.
Can I join you?
Absolutely.
Okay. At the word junkie, if you want to follow him. Nikki, you can get hold of Nikki by either following her on Twitter at Nikki Robertson, N-I-C-C-I Robertson. Or what's your website?
reinventhealth.co.za.
And then Zakira, you're a health coach. What does that mean? Do you want more people or are you like so popular that...
I just help people see the healthiness in their body.
And you look very healthy as well, so definitely. At Zax_K, that's ZAAKZ underscore K. I'm also going to tweet those different handles and their pictures as well. Thank you so much, guys, for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks a million. Thanks for having us.